Great. Well, can I just say my thank you to you for your welcome again here this weekend. It's been great to be with you. And fantastic to see so many people coming along to the different events and hearing the good news of the Christian message. And that's a real thrill. So I'll be trying to remember to pray for you all as you continue with this work. And this weekend's only a small part of the big picture, isn't it, of what God is doing in people's lives. So, it's been hard work. But I'm sorry, it's not over. You've got, at least until you get to heaven. So there we are. But that's great. Now, we've got probably technical things, have we? Right, okay, it's coming. No, it's all right. Yeah, you do need to do that. Thanks. All right. Okay, good. Now, I want you to imagine for a few minutes that you were walking through the hills somewhere, up in the mountains, perhaps up in North Wales or up in the Lake District. And you're on a sort of narrow mountain path, and suddenly you find yourself very carefully walking along this path because at either side there's a sheer drop. Sorry, things get worse because a mist descends, and now you're even more carefully making your way along this path for fear of falling over the edge. Sorry, it gets even worse, because you do fall over the edge. And you fall over the edge. The good news is, there's a very handy tree growing from the cliff, and you manage to grab hold of the tree. And now you're dangling in midair, you know, hanging there helpless. And then you hear a voice. And the voice says, "Grab my hand and I'll pull you up." And sure enough, this hand appears out of the fog over the edge of the cliff. Now, here's the question. What do you do? Well, you say it's obvious. You grab the hand. Yeah, but wait a minute. What's on the other end of that arm? Now, that's important, isn't it? If it's a 3-stone weakling who's going to fall over the cliff with you, then you're better off holding on to the tree. Worse still, if it's a psychopathic maniac just waiting for you to let go of the tree and then he's going to let go of you, you're in big trouble, aren't you? You want to be sure that the person who says, "Trust in me," if your life depends on it, you want to be absolutely sure they're trustworthy, don't you? Now, I think that's the issue here in John 14, this passage that we read together. You see, if you look at that top line, what is Jesus saying to his disciples and to us? He's saying, "You trust in God? Well, trust also in me." And then he goes on to talk about death and life after death and heaven. And then he goes on to say that actually I am the one that can get you to heaven. So I want you to put your life in my hands. Now that is a very big ask, isn't it? Jesus is actually saying, the same trust that you put in God, you put in me. And I will guarantee you eternal life, heaven itself. Wow, what a claim to make. You know, Jesus made some amazing claims, isn't he? That's why the person that said that Jesus can be dismissed as completely irrelevant, of no importance, or he must be accepted of supreme importance, but the one thing he cannot be is of moderate importance. Well, they're absolutely right, aren't they? So if what he's saying here is true, it's of supreme importance. If it's not true, it's of no importance. But the one thing it can't be is sort of, well, you know, interesting. Do you get the point? Christ claims really are black and white in that sense. We've got to make a choice, a decision about them. We've got to decide whether we're going to trust him or not. Now, Jesus makes a number of claims in this passage. We're going to look at them in a minute. But I want you to notice that he gives us good grounds, reasons for believing these astonishing claims. If you look at that bottom sentence there, right at the bottom of the screen, this is what Jesus says. He says, "Believe me when I say I'm in the Father is in me. Or at least believe on the evidence of the miracles themselves." Now, I find that very reassuring. Thomas, who comes in that conversation a little bit earlier on, he was a doubter, wasn't he? You know, doubting Thomas. Bit of a pessimist as well for Thomas, you know. Every silver lining has a cloud. That was Thomas, wasn't it? And he's not going to believe unless it's proved to him. He wants evidence. Now, you know, the very interesting thing is that Jesus does not ask for blind faith. He actually gives them good reasons, good grounds, real evidence for trusting him. Now, I'm a bit of a Thomas, are you? Maybe you can associate with Thomas, you know. I need to be convinced. Do you know the wonderful thing about God is he doesn't just ask us to close our eyes and jump. He actually gives us good reasons, grounds for our faith. It is a step of faith, that is true. But there's a tremendous logic to that faith. It is a reasonable faith. And when you put your trust in Christ, you're putting your trust in someone who's proved that he's trustworthy. Now, Jesus there talks about the miracles. The whole Gospel of John, this is part of that Gospel, is a book of sign miracles. They come again and again. So you go right back to the beginning of John, John chapter 2, and you'll find Jesus at a wedding. You know the story? The wine runs out. Jesus says to the servants, fill those huge jars with water. They think he's out of his mind, but they do it, I guess. They're desperate. Fill the jar with water, pour it out, best of wines. Amazing. Or, a little bit further on, he's before a crowd of 5,000 and more, probably many more. And all he's got is five fiddling loaves and five loaves, two fishes, that's it. And yet, he breaks the loaves and the fish and feeds the entire crowd. In fact, more than that, there's 12 baskets left afterwards. People are stuffed, they can't eat any more. Now, what have they just witnessed? They have just witnessed, haven't they, an act of creation. If you can turn water into wine, and if you can multiply fish and bread, then what we're talking about here is a God thing, isn't it? What they're witnessing is a God thing. This is supernatural. What is Jesus doing? He's demonstrating who he really is. He's giving grounds for his claims. He's saying, look, there's the proof. He walks on water. He defies the laws of gravity. But if he's the one who created those laws in the first place, then he's at liberty to do so, isn't he? He can reverse those laws. What is he doing? He's demonstrating who he really is. Of course, the final and greatest miracle that he performs, the final evidence, comes later than this conversation, a few days later, Christ is crucified. This is this Thursday night in the upper room. Friday he's crucified. Buried, stone cold dead in a stone cold tomb. But Sunday morning, the tomb is empty. The stone is rolled away. And at the end of John's Gospel, Jesus Christ, the risen Lord, appears to his disciples, including Thomas. And Jesus says to Thomas, doubting Thomas, you want the evidence, Thomas? Put your fingers where the nails went. Put your fist where the spear went into my side. Stop doubting, believe. And what does Thomas say? He says, my Lord and my God. At least Thomas, when he came face to face with the evidence, the proof, at least he was honest enough to admit he'd been wrong, wasn't he? Right? Lord Chief Justice, Lord Darling, former Lord Chief Justice of England, he said of the resurrection of Jesus, in its favour as living truth, there exists such overwhelming evidence, positive and negative, factual and circumstantial, that no intelligent jury in the world could fail to bring in any verdict, other verdict, than that the resurrection story is true. It's the only explanation for the facts. Thomas realises that. He sees Jesus. So, to use a colloquialism, a phrase, Jesus put his money where his mouth was, didn't he? Right? He's not just saying, believe me because I'm telling you. He could have done that. But actually what he says is, I'll give you evidence. Here is the evidence. So I want to look very briefly at some of these claims that Christ makes. And I want to say he was right. He was right when he says, first of all, I am God. Now he makes that claim here in this passage very clearly, doesn't he? Jesus Christ, you understand this, don't you? Didn't just claim to be a great religious leader. A lot of people admit and are prepared happy to say that Jesus was a great man. That Jesus was a guru, a great teacher. Gandhi said that. The mightiest teacher that man has ever known, Gandhi says. But Jesus claims so much more, doesn't he? He actually claims to be God. And so Philip says, Lord, show us the Father, show us God. How many people have said that? You know, if I could see God, make him appear, I'd believe. Lord, show us the Father, and that'll be sufficient for us. Is that what you're saying? Show me God. If I could see God, I'd believe. What does Jesus say? Jesus, Philip, have I been with you such a long time, and you don't know who I am? If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. School teacher was teaching a class, an RE lesson, Christian school teacher, and one of the pupils said this classic thing, "Sir, have you ever seen God?" And he thought for a while, and he said, "Well, I could have done, but I was 2,000 years too late." And actually, he was right, wasn't he? See, if we had been there in that upper room, we would have seen God, literally. That is who Jesus was. God walking this world for 33 years. Demonstrating that he was God by his power, miraculous signs, but also by his character. John says at the beginning of his gospel, shining out of him came grace and truth, the very glory of God itself, shining out of Jesus' character. We saw it. For 3 years, we saw it. You want to know what God is like? Look at Jesus. You want to know what God is saying? Listen to Jesus. Do you know, folks, the good news is we are not groping around in the darkness looking for some glimpse of truth somewhere, you know, kind of pooling our ignorance, guessing as best as we can about God and hoping that we're all right when in fact we could all be totally wrong. Not at all. God has stepped out of heaven onto earth. So that we can know what he's like. To end all the debate and discussion. To give us that final, definitive, authoritative answer about God. Isn't that good news? And if you want to know what God is like tonight, look at Jesus. And you'll see God. The little boy was drawing a picture. His dad said to him, "What are you drawing?" The little boy said, "I'm drawing a picture of God." His dad said to him, "Son, you can't draw a picture of God. No one knows what God is like." Little boy thought for a while and he said, "Well, they will when I've finished." Now, Jesus was saying that in effect, wasn't he? He was saying, now you know what God is like. Because I've revealed him to you, because I am God. So Christ was right when he says, "I am God." Astonishing claim, but he gives us reasons for believing it. And he proves it's true. Second thing Jesus was right about was when he talks of heaven. Now that's what he's talking about here. Not surprising, because he's just told his disciples he's going to die. And they're troubled. They're deeply disturbed. They love him. They followed him. And now he says he's going to be crucified. Just in a few hours' time. They're devastated. But Jesus says, don't be troubled. Why? Because I am going to prepare a place for you. He says, in my Father's house are many rooms. He's talking about heaven. Now, don't misunderstand this, will you? I think some people have. Some people think, well, you know, in heaven there's lots of mansions. You know, big houses. Perhaps Victorian looking, and we're all going to get a little plot and a lawn to mow. That doesn't sound like heaven to me. That sounds like the opposite. But, you know, and that's going to be it, you know? Well, look, what Jesus is doing here is using another illustration. He used to love to use illustrations. A house is a place where people live, isn't it? And he's saying, look, I am going to prepare a place for you to live. It's going to be with God, with me. It's a real place. It's as real as any building. It's as real as the building we're sitting in tonight. It's as real as Buckingham Palace or the White House. It is a real place. Real people live there. God is preparing a place. It's a very roomy place as well. He says there are many rooms. There's plenty of room for you. And he says God wants people to live there with him forever. Heaven is real. Forget this idea of sitting on some wet cloud, strumming a harp, singing hymns with a halo. It's a nonsense. Listen, the God who made this world, as beautiful as it, breathtaking in its beauty at times, isn't it? Even though it's been spoiled. It is a breathtakingly beautiful, amazing planet. The God who made this world is making another world. But this new world, this new home for man to live in, is flawless, perfect. And Jesus says, don't let your hearts be troubled. Yes, I'm going to die, and we're all going to die one day, but there's a glorious future awaiting for those who will put their trust in me. Do you wonder about life after death? Do you? So many different versions of it, aren't there? I mean, here's a few. Up there on the right-hand side, Hindus and Buddhists believe in reincarnation. You know, you die, you come back, live another life, you die, come back. And how, you know, what form that takes depends on how good you are. So squash an ant, that could be Hitler, couldn't it? Squat a fly, that could be, I don't know, Pol Pot. And we're all going to go through this dreadful cycle of trying to escape this awful thing of trying to improve ourselves. That sounds like a bit of a nightmare to me. I don't know about you, but a lot of people believe it, don't they? And who's to say they're wrong, folk would say. How do you know they're wrong? Or what about the spiritists? You enter a spirit world, you can be contacted. Or what about Bertrand Russell at the top left-hand corner there? You know, when I die, I rot. Nothing more than food for worms. There's no life. It's annihilation when you die. That's it. And there's that great philosopher of our age, Terry Wogan. I've always thought heaven was here and hell too. Who gets which is pretty arbitrary. And I suppose a lot of people feel like Spike Milligan, who's now sadly died. But he says this, I have a problem. I'd like to believe in heaven and afterlife, but I can find no evidence of it. Now, remember what Jesus said? Believe on the evidence of the miracles. The greatest miracle, the resurrection. How do we know there's life after death? How do we know that Bertrand Russell isn't right? Or the Hindus and Buddhists and reincarnationists aren't right? We know because Jesus Christ has given us the evidence. He's risen from the grave. He's the one that can speak with authority. And we've got to listen. Don't listen to me. What right have I to tell you? I've never died. I don't know. Do I? And neither did any of these guys, to be honest. That was just guesswork. It was just opinion. I want to know. So I don't want to get to the end of my life and find out I was wrong. Did you hear about the guy who ran the marathon and was winning? And this was in the Olympics, apparently. He entered the stadium to the roar of the crowds, completing the final lap, finishing tape ahead. He was going to win the gold medal. Suddenly he became aware of the officials running alongside him, trying to distract his attention. And he realised why. Because he'd entered the stadium in the wrong direction. When he turned round to correct his error, the runners behind him had beaten him to the finishing tape. And he sort of staggered and collapsed. Now, if you'd have gone up to that guy afterwards and said, well, all that matters is you were sincere, can you imagine how he would have felt? I think he'd have given you a black eye, wouldn't he? What do you mean all that matters is how sincere? I was wrong. I lost all those years of training, all that the hours of agony on the road. And I get to the finishing tape and I have lost. Folks, I don't want that to happen to me. Do you want it to happen to you? You get to the end of your life? And you find out you've lost, you were wrong, you were sincere, but you were misguided. What a tragedy. Can't think of anything worse. But you see, Jesus comes along and tells us so we don't have to be sincerely wrong, so that we can be right about life after death. He's the one who can tell us. In the olden days, apparently there used to be a man that would go down into the mine shaft. He would carry with him a lamp. And the lamp would detect the presence of methane gas. And the men would wait at the pit head for the man to return to tell them whether it was safe to go down into the pit that day to work. They wouldn't dare go down into that pit until he came back and gave them the all clear. Listen, Jesus Christ is like that man. He's gone down into death and he's come back with a message for the world, hasn't he? Yes, it's a message of great hope. Yes, we can enter the grave safely because we know there is a heaven. Mind you, it's also a message of warning. Jesus says there's a hell. And that's not shoveling coals with cheeky demons. It's eternal separation from God. And Jesus Christ says, we all need to be prepared. And I'm the one that can prepare you. See, third thing Jesus says, more briefly, he says this, not only am I God, not only is heaven real, he says, I am the only way to God. He says these amazing words in John 14, verse 6. He says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father. He's just been talking about the Father in heaven. No one comes to God in heaven except through me. Now, I want you to notice about that statement what Christ says, and I am well aware that this is politically incorrect. And who knows, in the years to come, perhaps I could be arrested for saying it. But I've got to be true to what Christ says. Jesus says, There is only one way to heaven. He says, I am the way. Not a way, the way. Exclusive. Only one. Get rid of this nonsense idea that there are lots of paths going up the mountain. They all get there in the end. Jesus says, that's not true. There's only one way. Now remember, we're talking here about God speaking. The one who rose from the dead. The one who can speak with authority. It'd be very arrogant if I said it, wouldn't it? It'd be supremely bigoted if I was to dare to stand on this platform and say, there's only one way to God. I wouldn't dare do that. But when God says it, we've got to listen, haven't we? Yeah, we do. And here is God saying to us, there's only one way. Jesus saying, I am that way. And notice, it's a personal claim. He doesn't say, this is the way, follow it. In other words, you know, try your best, become religious, go to church, say your prayers, sing hymns, give money to charity. He isn't saying, this is the way, do it, and you'll get there. He's saying, I am the way. Be a bit the difference between me saying to, I don't know, someone here, anybody, well, Andy at the back there. Me saying to Andy, look, Andy, you want to get to, I don't know, Llangollen in Wales. We might not want to, but there we are. Supposing he did. I could say to him, look here, Andy, here's a map book. I'll do my best to give you some directions, and you do your best to follow them, and you might get there. I could do that, couldn't I? That'd be one way. But should I tell you a better way? A better way would be something to say, Andy, jump in my car, and I'll take you there. I know the way. I'll get you there. Personally, I'll take you. Jesus is not saying, here's a map book, try and follow it, do your best and you might make it. No, he's saying, I am the one that will personally get you there. I will take you there. That's the only way to get there. You can't find your own way, but I'm the one who can take you. And if you'll put your trust in me and who I am and what I've done for you, then you will get there. And he spoke those words, didn't he, just hours before he was to be taken, tried in that kangaroo court, crucified on that cross, die for our sin. Rise again from the dead and conquer death. You see, what Jesus is saying is this. Through what I am going to do, through giving my own life for you, I am going to become the way to heaven. And I often say on the cross, it was as if Jesus put one hand to God and one hand to man, one hand to heaven and one hand to earth. And he became the bridge, the link, the way. The way to life. As Jesus died there. He's the only one who's done it, isn't he? He's the only one who's died for our sin. The only one who could. All our good religious intentions will all fall short. Only Christ can forgive our sin. Because only Christ has died for it in this way. Risen from the grave. And if you put your trust in him, he says, I guarantee you, not a hope so, not a maybe, not I'd like to think so, but a 100% guarantee. Final point, I'm finished. Look, Jesus was right when he said, I'm God. He was right when he said, heaven is real. He was right when he said, I'm the only way to God. The only way to God through putting your trust in me. Not good works, but my death for you on the cross. And therefore, there is no need to fear God. Don't let your hearts be troubled. We are troubled by death, aren't we? Let's be honest. We are, all of us, at times, troubled by death. Some of us very anxious. Perhaps we sweep it under the carpet. We don't like to think about it because it disturbs us so much. And then somebody dies and you've got to go to the funeral and you're face to face with the ultimate reality. And you can't hide, can you? And one day you know it's going to be you. It's going to be me. And what then? So many people fear death. There was a young girl called Sarah Winchester, 18 years of age. She married a man called Alex Winchester. Now, you may recognise the name Winchester, famous because of Winchester rifles. That's how Alex Winchester had made his fortune. And he'd become, in those days, the equivalent today of a multi-millionaire. And so she married this very, very wealthy man. But within a few short years, although they had a daughter, a child, within a few short years, both Alex Winchester and their daughter had died. She was left alone, a widow. Sarah was left also with a terrible fear of death. And she was desperate, didn't know what to do. And so, very mistakenly and sadly, she went to a medium. And this is what the medium said to Sarah Winchester. Look, if you want to deal with your fear of death, and if you want to guarantee immortality, this is what you must do. Go home and begin building your house. Don't stop building it. For the rest of your life, build this house. Make it bigger and bigger. And if you do that, then you'll deal with this fear of death and you'll gain immortality. And it's absolutely true, this story. Bizarre as it may seem, she believed her. She went home, she ordered the architects in, the builders in, they began building a house. In the end, this Winchester house, as it became known, this mansion had 10,000 windows and doors, 40 different bedrooms, and apparently they were constantly at work. They would even knock bits down just so they could keep building. But on the 5th of September, 1905, I think it was, she discovered that the medium had lied to her. Because Sarah Winchester died. The lengths that people will go to because of the fear of death. But the great tragedy is, all the while, here is one who can guarantee us that home in heaven. The one who says, you needn't fear death. I am the one who can give you eternal life. I've died your death and taken your hell so that you can enter my heaven. And all you've got to do is put your trust in me. Jesus, it's not a hand out of the fog, is it? No, he steps out of heaven so we can see him clearly. And he puts out his arms to us, as it were, those nail-pierced hands. And he says, take my hand and I'll pull you up. And you know what? You can trust your whole eternity to him. And he will not let you down. And he will not let you go. And one day, he'll take you through death and into heaven forever. Isn't that good news? And you know what? It can be true for you tonight. And all you've got to do, well, I say all, it's hard, isn't it? But what we need to do is put our trust in him. Stop trusting in ourselves or in our religion or in our goodness. And start trusting in the one, the only one, who can bring us to God. Because he's died to do that, risen from the dead. Won't you do that? Even tonight? Listen, I urge you. At the end of this weekend, we've had such a good time, haven't we? We've enjoyed so many different things and we've heard so many different messages, maybe. But look, I ask you tonight, very plainly, very directly. If tonight is your last night, and tomorrow you find yourself in eternity, how will it be with you? Are you ready? Can you put your head on the pillow tonight that you know if you don't wake up the next morning, you'll be in heaven with God? Because all is well between you and your Creator. You're right with God because of Jesus. Do you long to have that assurance? Then tonight, why not take the opportunity? In fact, I urge you to do so. Now, put your trust in Christ. He's only a prayer away, you know. And if you were to commit your life to him, he's waiting and willing to forgive you. And he will not let you down. When it matters most, he will be there.